The Operations Leadership Podcast with Gautam Basu provides insights for today's business leaders on creating value through operations improvement, process excellence, digital innovation, and organizational leadership.
Hello and welcome to the Operations Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Gautam Basu. Today we have an exciting guest for you, Mr. Jose Toivainen. Jose is a recent graduate from Aalto University School of Business Information Services Management Department, and currently he's the CEO and co-founder of a company called Days. Days is a reverse logistics and returns management service provider for e-commerce platforms, and we discuss more about his journey into the startup world. This is his second startup, and what it takes to be a venture within the logistics and operations domain. So we hope you enjoy this interview with Jose. All right. Welcome, Jose, to the Operations Leadership Podcast.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Great. So could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with a logistics-related startup?
Yes. Good question. So I was a student at Aalto in the business school earlier. I already have one failed startup behind me, and there I had some painful lessons about co-founders and investors and everything. This time I hope I'm doing some things differently. And after my first startup, I'm a huge online shopper, so I always had these returns laying around in my hallway. Some of these require printing for the labels and packaging, boxes, taping, and to be honest, some of them have really obscure drop-offs. So as a consumer, the worst one was that you're expected to go to Vantaa. There's this carrier terminal, and you should return your package there. Well, after missing some refunds, the return windows were gone. I was pretty mad about this, and decided to kind of validate this problem. I had this problem validation from my previous startup, and I gathered some friends and friends of friends together, made a route out of them. They had returns laying around. I took a nominal fee of €5 per pickup. Mm-hmm. I picked them up. I packaged them, print the labels if needed, and dropped them off at the right places. Well, I was pretty excited about this afterwards. I decided to post about this online, and accelerator I went through with my previous startup had this co-founder dating website, and apparently somebody reads it, because after posting my thoughts there, my now co-founder contacted me in a couple of hours. And after we met live in a coffee house, we decided to work together for a couple of weeks and see how it goes, how's the chemistry and roles and the whole thing. And during those few weeks, we realized that the consumer problem is pretty obvious and everybody can relate to that. But the power to change things in the return process is on the retailer side. And we started to partner up with local retailers. We're still on that path. Currently, all of our partners with Days are in the Helsinki capital region.
Mm. So if I understood correctly, I mean, it's way a lot of these startups get started and kind of it starts with a problem, right?
Yes.
And sometimes that problem can be felt by the actual startup founder. So you kind of took that, as you mentioned, the returns ran with it in that sense. So maybe a question around entrepreneurship, because You're from the ISM, Information
yes.
Services Management Department. And so some students, they go for traditional companies, industrial companies, some go for consulting, some go for tech companies. So was it the rationale that the problem that you were suffering with this this startup, that it was so acute that you decided to do something about it yourself? Is that kind of the
yes.
impetus? Yeah.
Yes. I wasn't actively seeking startup ideas or anything at
yeah.
the time.
Okay.
So you could say that the problem picked me and not vice versa.
Mm. Interesting. And what is the name of your company that you start
with? It's Days.
Days, okay.
Yeah.
And what is Days doing to solve the problem of these returns?
Yes, good question. So instead of you printing the labels and packaging the return, taking it to the drop-off, we handle everything for you. So we come to your front door, pick it up, and handle everything from there.
Hmm. And that's within the Helsinki region?
Yes, we're currently live in the Helsinki capital region.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said you're also going to be partnering with the retailers. So
yep.
how does that work structurally
sure.
with them?
So currently all of our partners are in the region. They have their own warehouses. So we make routes around these warehouses. And these routes are somewhere between 20 and 40 stops. They can take like a couple of hours. And once a business day or operating day, we visit the partner's warehouse, mm-hmm. drop everything off in there. And to bootstrap volumes, rental stores and re-commerce stores have been great at this. Despite their small or medium size revenue, they have a lot of reverse volumes.
Mm.
And if you had an online store of the similar size, you wouldn't have that much reverse volumes.
So if we look at kind of the network structure of this reverse component, you mentioned that there's roughly around 40 pickups for the returns. So how many drop-off locations are you looking at?
Currently. We have five.
Five, currently. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're planning to kind of scale that?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's city by city.
Okay.
So currently we're trying to prove Helsinki
mm-hmm.
in terms of the margins and the efficiency.
Got it.
And then we can just replicate it
mm-hmm.
Everywhere.
I see. And could you tell us a little bit more, you said a little bit about the online returns process. And of course, if you have forward flows, the reverse or return
yes.
flow is quite different. So maybe two questions for you. Could you tell us a little bit about these online returns process? And is it also part of this thing called the circular economy?
Yeah, first of all, I think it is, because this is a common misconception about returns, that your return is going to get burned or trashed afterwards, and that still happens sometimes, but usually you're buying new stuff, and this is actually a customer return. So the vast majority, depending on the product category, goes back to resale as new. Then you have some items, especially like lower value items, that go into an outlet. And these are usually maybe like pieces of clothing that would require a lot of repackaging mm-hmm. or something. But it's a tiny minority of returns that will get trashed.
Hmm. So if you look at like all the returns volumes, let's say like 100% of returns volume, so
yep.
what the vast majority will be resold?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely, especially on higher value items like small electronics.
Yeah.
You might be buying a return without knowing it.
Okay. Interesting. Yep. And there's no law or regulation stating that they have to the retailer has to state that this has been returned or no?
Currently, no.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay, and is this part of this circular economy?
Yes, I do think so, because well, in terms of sustainability, people point out this logistics from the life cycle of the product, mm-hmm. but usually it's like a small percentage of the total total emissions of the product. Mm-hmm. The vast majority comes from production and refinement in the early stages, and well, even if you would move it back and forth multiple times later, it wouldn't make any like a noticeable difference mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in the emissions.
And what is the kind of scale of this let's say problem? Let's take Finland for example. I mean, if we look at, for example, the Helsinki region, or even let's say Finland as a country, what are we thinking about in terms of cost, in terms of scale? What are we looking at in terms of this reverse component? Any ideas?
Yeah. So across all of e-commerce in the Nordics, the return rate is around 20%.
And wow, that's high.
Yes. And in some categories like fashion and apparel, it's even higher. It's around 35%. Some retailers even have around 50%, like Zalando, famously. Mm-hmm. Their whole kind of business model revolves around that.
Okay. That's quite high.
Yeah.
And I could imagine that the overall e-commerce volumes have also increased.
So. Yes. They're still growing around 9% per year.
Okay.
In Europe.
Okay.
And in the US as well. So we're talking about a huge base, and on top of that, like pretty rapid growth.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I can imagine that, you know, after COVID several years back, there has been a boom in e-commerce. So it's still growing at the 9% a clip. That's a lot.
Yeah, and there was a slump right after COVID. Mm-hmm. But for example, last Black Friday 2023 mm-hmm. was a record year in volumes, and we're back on the pre-pandemic growth.
I see. Interesting. Maybe also a question around this last mile logistics and a question around vertical integration. Should these last mile logistics, should they be vertically integrated to the rest of the e-commerce stack, or what's your view on that?
Yes. So you're probably thinking of Amazon here. Mm-hmm. I'm personally a huge Amazon fanboy. Mm-hmm. I like what they do operationally. Well, first of all, I think the whole e-commerce is going to get polarized between these everything stores where Amazon is dominating and D2C, direct consumer channels. You can think of Apple or Nike or Adidas, or even like small, you know, craftspeople mm-hmm. really caring about their product. And there's a huge difference between those categories. So Amazon is vertically integrating everything from like marketing, the initial steps of the customer journey, up until the post-purchase and everything in between. But on the D2C side, you see companies like Shopify, Stripe, Klarna, like every layer of the stack is a, well, huge category by itself. And I think the last mile / first mile is going to be one of these. Mm-hmm. And currently it's pretty commoditized and fragmented. Mm-hmm. And we can go deeper into that,
I mean, it's an interesting thing because, of course, you start to look at kind of make or buy type decisions. So vertical integration does have benefits, but it also has cons. I mean, there's a great book by Charlie Fine called Clock Speed that talks about this, the kind of, let's say, the overall thing of an industry either being vertically integrated or kind of modularly designed, you know. So he likens it to kind of a DNA type of helix. So maybe vertical integration is could be good now, but what do you think in the future? Do you think it will always be like that, or will there also be kind of, as you mentioned, commoditization and maybe a bit of outsourcing?
Yeah. I personally think on the direct-to-consumer side that every layer is going to be a brand by themselves, and there's going to be differentiation there. Like Klarna has proven, their product is basically a total commodity offering credit or money to the buyers. But somehow, and with a similar B2B2C approach, they have made a brand out of themselves. And they're going to have a blockbuster IPO this year, I think.
Okay.
In Sweden.
Interesting. And what are some of the key metrics for these last and first mile logistics components? What kind of key performance indicators or metrics do you look at as far as efficiency or effectiveness?
Yes. So the most important one is something called stops per hour. And this is like the metric that everybody has their eyes on. UPS in the Helsinki area, and don't quote me on this, but they can get to around 12 or even higher, depending on the route. But with our gig drivers and regular vehicles, we have it around 6 to 7. And this is like a pretty efficient. Our margins are pretty healthy there.
So stops per hour. So it's 6 or 7 stops per hour. That includes pickups and deliveries?
Yes, yes. Okay. So we're already doing some deliveries with the rental stores because it doesn't make any sense to have a different carrier for the outbound and another one for the pickups. But we're still really focused on our initial wedge, which is return pickups.
Okay, so stops for hour. What other kind of stuff do you measure? Anything on the cost side?
Yes, yes. So, well, we're really focused on the variable costs because you can't scale them across the operations, and currently it does include the third-party software, the customer service, and about customer service, that's a major one, because when you have a bug or a like error in the copy for the instructions, like that replicates. If you have scale, that replicates all across your operations, and you're trying to get that to a minimum, and it does affect your margins directly.
Okay.
So that's a major one. We're also using some third-party software currently, but we're trying to build everything in-house eventually to kind of get to this scalable model.
Right.
On the cost side.
And you were mentioning that you have gig drivers. Yep. So what is your take on, for example, labor shortages? I know, for example, in certain European countries as well as the U.S., there could be like driver shortages, you know. So have you experienced any of that in your operation?
No. Currently, there are huge waiting lines for every company offering gig work. And well, we also differ a bit from these food delivery platforms, because as opposed to them, they pay per delivery, and they have these huge demand spikes around lunchtime and in the evening. We have like a more stable. We have these routes which could take from 2 to 8 hours. Mm-hmm. You know like beforehand what is going to take. Mm-hmm. And yeah, people have been really happy so far. Also, they don't have to deal with food stinking up your car while you're delivering.
Right. And so this route optimization, is that something you've developed in-house, or is that something that you've taken as a third-party software?
Yeah, it's a third-party thing. Okay. And this is a common myth mm-hmm. in the industry, mm-hmm. that everybody has their own optimization. Mm-hmm. But honestly, most of them are just using Google software or... Mm-hmm. Or like tools for that.
All right.
There are some others, but yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe a question around this polarization of this last mile, you know, for on-demand. And for example, in Europe, it looks like the deliveries, like for example, Amazon, they're longer, typically 2 to 3 days for deliveries. I know, for example, being in the States a couple weeks back, they have next day deliveries. So why is that missing in the European Union?
Yeah. Yeah. The distances are pretty rough, first of all, like especially in the Nordics. But there's also a cultural difference. So currently, as you mentioned, we have on-demand, and then we have the standard delivery, which takes like 3 days or more. Mm-hmm. And there's pretty much nothing in between. And we think that it's possible to offer something in the next window. Mm-hmm. And it could be done with similar margins, mm-hmm. as of standard delivery. Mm-hmm. And people really prefer that. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
So, okay, so you mentioned a couple of things there. There's the distances, maybe something around the density of mm. the population, I mean, especially in Finland, where it's sparsely populated in the north and central, where in Uusimaa it's more. But then, what else needs to happen so it can get, let's say, a little bit quicker response time?
Yeah, yeah. So this is a question about warehousing.
Right.
And
it's
like local warehousing. So in direct-to-consumer, we have the luxury of having a small amount of SKUs, mm-hmm. which amount to most of the deliveries. Let's say 90%... items bought are, you know, from the same couple of SKUs. Okay. Then you have this long tail of low volume stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And you can just store those most popular items locally. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require much from the sorting center mm-hmm. or warehouse. Mm-hmm. But as long as you have it nearby,
right.
It's really easy to offer next day.
That's interesting. So you've done an analysis on the stock keeping unit level.
Yeah.
So can you give an idea of what types of, maybe not the SKU numbers, but what types of products are the most kind of common for these?
Yeah. So it goes across all categories. Mm-hmm. So even in high SKU categories like clothing, on the direct to consumer side, there are some items that are hugely popular mm-hmm. globally, mm-hmm. and you have the same long tail I mentioned there. Well, you also have some like department store type of retailers, mm-hmm. but when talking about strictly D2C, the business model revolves around this low number of SKUs.
Got it. So like things like clothing and shoes and stuff like
that. Yeah.
Have you ever had any situations where you had like, let's say, white goods, like washers and dryers, like big bulky materials, or is it more like kind of, clothing, stuff like that?
Yes. So we have this rule of thumb in our operations that everything has to fit in the trunk of a Corolla.
Okay.
Because of the gig workers and their cars. Mm-hmm. And yes, we have already had some situations where the pickup was larger expected. Mm-hmm. And we have dealt with those pretty well. Mm-hmm. But you kind of get better at it.
Okay.
With your instructions, and people get used to.
Sure. When you, let's say, place an order for a reverse logistics flow, wouldn't they already in the order put the dimensions and the weight so you get an idea what you're picking up and how what the load will be for the asset?
Yes. So when you partner with the retailers, you have the luxury of knowing it beforehand.
Yeah.
So the customer doesn't have to type in anything. Mm-hmm. So that typically they either register on their return, they select the item before booking our pickup for it. Mm-hmm. So we definitely know what's coming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the booking flow is really easy in result.
Sure. Okay. I can imagine that that's probably pretty important information to receive.
Yes.
So you can plan the load optimization as well as the routes.
Yep.
And all that kind of stuff. So, okay, fair enough. Could you tell us a little bit about the difference between traditional asset-heavy logistics and, let's say, tech-enabled logistics platforms, asset-light maybe?
Yeah. So I see we have three categories in last mile, and these are the first one would be international carriers. Mm-hmm. Like DHL, UPS, FedEx. Then you would have national carriers like Posti, PostNord, mm-hmm. Ring. Then you have these tech platforms that are really flexible and can scale up and down depending on the demand, like DoorDash or Uber Eats. Mm-hmm. Or Uber in general would be there.
Okay, interesting. And so how does that, let's say, deploy when you have a more, let's say you own the assets, the trucks, the whatever kind of heavier assets, and then you have, let's say, a software-based asset light. We used to call fourth-party logistics, right? So,
yeah.
So, more kind of not owning the assets, but basically all of the information systems that can orchestrate the flows.
Yes. So we're definitely in the latter category. Mm-hmm. You have no choice there. You can't compete directly with asset-heavy carriers. Mm-hmm. Because of their huge scale.
Yeah.
But when you have this asset-light model, you can scale like exactly by demand. Like even if your demand went to zero, mm-hmm. you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
You'll, in the worst case, just exit from the city.
Got it. And so this model, you're deploying city by city. So starting off with Helsinki, and then what's next? What do you have any ideas of how you're going to roll out the solution?
Yeah, I'm not going to give the exact city.
Okay.
But we're looking at the Baltics and the Nordics.
Baltics, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So already international.
Yeah.
And does it make sense to go to a city that has a bit of population density?
Yeah. So we have a there are two schools on this. So Well, the obvious thought would be to go to as dense as possible, like these huge cities. But there's this competitive element. Even if you didn't have a direct competition, there's more parcel lockers. More carriers there, and also suburbs is this famously coined by DoorDash in the early days, that they went after suburbs as opposed to the really dense areas, because parking and commuting between stops is way more efficient there.
That makes sense. Interesting. So what's next for you guys? I heard through the grapevine that you guys got some funding as well. So can you tell us a little bit about and what are kind of the next plans within the next 3-6 months time period?
Sure. Currently, we're already 6 people in the team.
All right.
Maybe in a year, it will either be, if you're listening to this in 2025, it's going to be either 0 or like 50.
Okay.
I hope it's the latter one.
Yeah.
But currently we're onboarding new people, trying to prove our model in Helsinki, get the volumes.
Okay. And you guys did get a successful funding round,
yes,
right?
We got the first round of funding.
Good.
Done.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And that will give kind of a runway for next few months, a year?
It's around a year.
Okay. Yeah. So then you have essentially a year to kind of prove out the model, do the necessary tweaks to the business model and whatnot. So
we will be proven by fall this year.
Okay.
In the Helsinki capital region.
Mm-hmm. Great. Wonderful. Is there any other things that you want to listen to? How do people learn more about your solution? How can they get in contact with you or learn more about your solution if they have a returns problem?
Yes. So on top of partnering with retailers, you can also go to our web app. Just go to trydays.com and click the booking button there. You can use any label there. If it's like a DHL or UPS, it doesn't matter. We'll come pick it up from your front door. So try it out if you're in the region.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for this very excellent conversation on returns and reverse and e-commerce. Very, very, very interesting stuff. So I wish you all the best of luck with this new venture.
Thank you, Gautam. Oh. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Operations Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Gautam Basu. If you like what you're listening to in this podcast series, then please hit subscribe. And until next time.